The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 17th, 2014. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we are the best. And we don't try, we succeed. And another thing, we are A-rated, and that means we are aggression. So today is Friday. Friday is when Brooks Kubik is on the show, and we're going to have quite a show today. But before I get into bringing Brooks on, I want to tell you two things. One thing mainly, for any of you who don't know anything as far as what's going on with what Brooks has been doing, he's got a new book that's going to be, well, it is out, but it has not been sent out yet, and it's called Knife, Fork, and Muscle. That is going to be, as I said in almost every show, I believe, from my personal viewpoint, that will be the bookend to dinosaur training. So be on the lookout for that. Any of you haven't gone out and checked it out and ordered it, you know, you can go out to Brooks' site, which is brookskubik.com, and, you know, take a look-see at it. And obviously he's got tons and tons of information out there on steel, physical culture, et cetera, et cetera. So, Brooks, welcome to the show. And I know today we're going to talk about weight progression set to set. So we're glad to have you here on Fridays. Thanks for being on.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Eric.
Well, we're glad. Let's this is a subject, you know, I know that you get a lot of mail about this because people – aren't sure, you know, the standard fare might be, you know, what do I do, dump a set and not, you know, 45s each set, you know, how do I warm up, how do I get to, you know, say I want to squat 400 pounds, how am I going to get to 400 pounds without, well, you know, the big word is always overtraining or failing or whatever, and we know we got to do a build up and all that to it. So let's start in with how do you define progression as far as with any type of weight training movement?
Are you talking about progression from set to set within a workout?
Well, yeah, we can do set to set, but, you know, progression, I guess people could say anything about progression. What I mean, if you had to give, like, a definition of, all right, let's go for set to set. How would you word that to somebody that wasn't really sure how to progress set to set?
Okay. Well, just focusing on progression from set to set within a workout, as opposed to progression from workout to workout, because in my mind, they're different.
Okay.
So I'm only going to focus on the set to set to set within one workout type of progression. And what that basically means is starting light with very light warm-up sets, gradually progressively increasing the weight on the bar, doing this in a fashion that warms you up and prepares you mentally and physically for the heavy sets, but does not tire you out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to prepare for the heavy sets, but not tire yourself out. Now, that also ties into the concept of choosing the weight for your heavy sets and how heavy you go and how many heavy sets you do and so on. For purposes of this discussion, this podcast, I'm going to refer to the heavy sets in your workout as work sets. Okay. So then the question really becomes, how do you go from your very first lightest warm-up set to your work set? And that question is one that I get all the time. I write emails and blog posts about it fairly frequently, several times a year. And I continue, you know, and I've covered it in books and in articles and in courses, and I continue to get the question. So, you know, it's obvious to me that this is one of those fundamental nuts and bolts, how do you really train for good results type things? Because a lot of people are confused by this, and a lot of people have questions about it. And frankly, you know, I think that one of the things that happens here, and tell me if you agree with this, is that people tend to overthink it.
I totally agree with you, because you know something, I find that with everybody now. It seems like you know what it is. It's sometimes, you know how we talk, you and I, about this basic thing. We're kind of like on. I'm kind of like shifting gears to basic for everything now. Why do we got to keep confusing and adding more? You know, it'd be like the best thing you'd ever want to eat. And you'd say, well, if I add a little bit more to the recipe, it's going to be better. Bull. Because you hit the nail right on the head, Brooks. It's, you've been doing this for years. You've been getting emails from people. You explain it through what you do, your books, whatever you're into. But yet, all these years you've been doing this, you're getting the one constant question. How do I train for a lift? And how do I add weight and be progressive with it where we can succeed every time? And if we don't succeed, we walk out of there knowing the next time we come back, we put our foot right through it, basically. So I'm in with total agreement with you here that I believe that people have a tendency to just muddle things. I don't know if it's human nature or not. Maybe it is. It's like, why do we got to keep pressing more into something that we could streamline, make very, very specific, and be successful with it?
Yeah, that's true. And part of the problem in physical training is that people get hung up on percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question often comes in, what percentage should I use for my first warm-up set?
Yep.
Okay, and the answer to that is it depends in part on how heavy you are going to be training that day. You know, for example, a lot of people say, well, it's probably good to do 50% of my work set for my first warm-up set. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or 60%. But, you know, those are standard numbers. People say, I'll start 50% of my work set, or I'll do 60% of my work set, and that's a good light warm-up. Okay. And then they want to know, what percentage do I jump from set to set? Should it be, mm-hmm. you know, 10% from set to set, or should it be 15%, 10%, 7%, 5%? Well, you know, what's the magic number? So you get a lot of these very, you know, these questions where people think that there's a very specific, here's the percentage you need to use every time on every exercise. And the problem with that is this. Let's say you're doing barbell curls and your work set, your heavy set, or your heavy sets, however many you're going to do, your work set or your work sets are going to be performed with 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you start at 50%, that's 50 pounds. So you do 50 pounds in your first warm-up set, 60 in the next, 70 after that, 80, 90, and now on your sixth set, you're ready to do your first actual working set. And you're well warmed up and you're ready to go. Okay. That would work fine. It would also work fine to start at 60%, do 60 pounds for your first set, 70 pounds for your second set, 80 pounds for your third set, 90 pounds for your fourth set, and then your work set or work sets are performed with 100 pounds. Very, very easy to do. However, what happens if you're handling 400 pounds?
Right.
For example, you're doing squats or you're doing deadlifts. Okay, now if you start at 60%, that's 240 pounds. And 240 pounds is too much weight for a warm-up set of squats or deadlifts. Mm-hmm. It just is. You know, the logical way to get from your first warm-up to your 400-pound set is going to be something much different. The percentages are going to be different because the work set is so much heavier, 400 pounds compared to 100 pounds. So when people are asking what's the percentage is going to be different based on the exercise mm-hmm. and based how heavy you go. I mean, you know, you were telling me before the show, you've been doing the hand and thigh lift or the thigh deadlift, you
yep.
know, with a really heavy weight. You know, a 60% out of the bat warm up might be way too much work. Mm-hmm. You know, you might want to start much, much lighter.
Right.
For example, on the 400 pounds, if I were doing 400 pounds for my work sets in squats or deadlifts, trap bar deadlifts, something like that, my first set would be with 135 pounds.
Yep.
And, you know, what percentage that is of 400, I'm not sure off the top of my head, and I don't have a calculator handy, but mm-hmm. it's nowhere near 60%.
Right.
It's closer to 30%. Okay. So
yep.
135, then I'd take a pretty big jump, 225. Some people would want to go lower. They'd want to go 135 and then jump to 185 mm-hmm. and then up to 225. And that's fine. It doesn't matter. But my jumps would be 135, 225, 275, 325, 350, 375, and 400.
Mm-hmm.
So that works out to a total of 7 sets. And one of them, the set with 400, is a work set. The 375 is pretty close and pretty heavy. So is the 350. So you're actually getting a fair amount of work building up. But your first actual go-for-broke set is with 400. And
right.
then you might do 1, 2, maybe even 3 sets with that 400. That's a whole nother discussion that we can have on another day, how many work sets to do. But
yep.
the progressions that I've just outlined start out very light and allow you to work up slowly and gradually and precisely until your whole workout gets to that work set with the heavy weight,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's when, you know, that's when all the fun begins and that's where all the benefit comes from.
Could I tell you how I do some of the things too?
Sure.
Okay. This is, I don't know. I experimented with this years ago. Say we were going to squat 400 pounds. What I do is I take the last number off of it, which would be 40 pounds, and I would do 40 pound jumps. So I would have went 400, 360, 320, 280. You know, I would have jumped right from like 230 with the collars on to 280 and went like that. That's how I do a lot of it now. And then if I really want to get kind of fancy with stuff, and like I told you, I'll put more on one side or more in one barrel or whatever, because that's just that's how I want to train it. I wouldn't tell people to do that unless you've messed with it, because it can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I might throw, as I call them, nickels, dimes, and quarters in the pile, and away we go. And I've had a lot of success like that, where before, like, everybody's writing you stuff, I'd be like, okay, well, today I'm going to do 405, say, in a deadlift. And, you know, I'd always have the – I've always been one of those guys that loves to throw pairs of 45s on, but let's face it, you're not going to be warmed up for that, and you can cream yourself. Plus, you can kind of overshoot the mark at that point too, because you've gone way beyond where you should have. So that's kind of why I went to percentages like that. And I find with that, Brooks, that at times it serves me very well.
Well, you're doing something that's very similar to what I've done.
Yep.
Which is basically 20-pound or 40-pound jumps,
right.
50 sometimes, and,
yep.
and use the same jump from set to set. And that's fine. The
mm-hmm.
the key point that people should take away from this discussion, the key point is Start light.
Yeah, definitely.
Really light. And one of the problems in this whole discussion, it's Aristotle and the horse.
Yep.
Now, people are going to be sitting there at home and they're thinking, Aristotle and the horse. What in the world is this lunatic talking about? Well, Aristotle and the horse is this. Aristotle, the great philosopher in ancient Greece, sort of the father of science and the father of the philosophy of science, was very emphatic about the need for empirical research. You go out and you review data. You don't just sit somewhere and read books. You don't just think great philosophical thoughts. In Aristotle's mind, you went out.
Mm-hmm.
You researched. You found things. You explored. You examined. Okay. So Aristotle was writing a book, and in the book, one of the things that he covered was a detailed description of the physiology of a horse. Don't ask me why, but he did. Part of the book, okay?
Yep.
You know, he says, okay, a horse has four legs, one tail, two ears, two eyes, one nose, one mouth, and in the mouth there are how many teeth? And he didn't know. And there was no way to sit there and philosophize about it and get the answer. And he couldn't do some kind of calculation like, you know, well, it's the size of the horse at the shoulder multiplied by the length of the horse from nose to tail divided by a certain number gives you the number of teeth. I mean, obviously, that's not the right answer. The only way to do it is to go out and find a horse and count the teeth.
Okay. Yep.
So Aristotle goes out, finds a horse, counts the teeth, and comes up with an answer, whatever it was. Let's say it's 40. And he says, and a horse has one mouth and 40 teeth. And he knows that's right because he just went out and counted. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Problem was, he did his research on a horse that was missing a couple of teeth. And so the number was wrong. And again, I don't remember, and I don't know what the numbers are, and I haven't gone out and counted a horse's teeth lately. You know, I'm sure a lot of people can correct me on this, but, you know, let's say the number should have been 42.
Yep.
He counted a horse that was missing two teeth, and so he said it was 40, and he wrote this in one of his books, and people read it for hundreds, thousands of years, and here's what they did. They would go out, and they would look at a horse, and they'd count the teeth, and they would say, ah, this horse has 42 teeth. It's an anomaly. It's a very strange thing. I hope it's not a disease. Okay? And,
yep.
And every time they counted a horse's teeth, they would say, well, you know, it's there's 42. Must be a sick horse. And the problem was they were convinced that Aristotle was right and must have been right because he was Aristotle and he put it in a book. And so they can't get it in their head that he made a mistake. And they keep every time they see a horse, they think the horse has a deformity because it has more teeth than Aristotle said it should have. Okay. One of the problems with this whole pounded progression thing originated with a training course written by the great Reg Park.
Yep.
The Reg Park Strength and Bulk course, which talks about 5x5 training. He has a program where you do the squat, the deadlift, the bench press 3 times a week, you know, basic strength and bulk training. I mean, this is really good real world stuff. Very, very good course. Bill Hinburn sells it. If you're interested in get it from Bill Hinburn, that's where I got it.
Yeah,
I got it back in like, I think 1971 or 72. The first thing I ever bought from Bill Hinburn. Great guy. I've been buying stuff from him ever since.
Yep.
So in this book, Park is talking about the 5x5 system, and he says do 2 warm-up sets followed by 3 work sets. And your progression would be 60%, 80%, 100% on your warm-up sets. And he gives an example, and the numbers in the example don't even – they they don't add up or the sets don't add up. So right away you've got the problem of Reg Park says to do one thing, but when he shows you a page from his own training journal, he's doing something a little different. Mm-hmm. So people are confused. And that's the problem of Aristotle's horse with the wrong number of teeth.
But
the other problem, you know, again, I said that people didn't believe that Aristotle could have been wrong. They don't believe Reg Park could have been wrong or that there's any alternative way of doing things. And so when Reg Park says do two warm-up sets and three work sets, people are like, oh, well, that's the way I've got to do it. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that works fine if you're talking about work sets with 100 or 120 or maybe even 150 pounds. But it doesn't work when you're doing work sets with 300 or 350 or 400, 450 or 500 pounds. It's mm-hmm. just too heavy. And so you have to make adjustments. And, you know, I always tell people 5x5 training is great. I love it. But if you need to do more sets to get up to your working weight and your 5x5 becomes 6x5 or 7x5 or 8x5, mm-hmm. that's fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but they think, well, you know, Brooks likes 5x5 and Reg Park likes 5x5 and I've got to do 5x5 so I can only do 5 sets. It's like, no. You can do as many sets as you need to do to get to the working sets and be ready to give them everything you have.
Yep.
Because that's what counts. The work sets are what counts.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, years ago when you were doing a lot of singles and stuff, this is why I went to the singles, mm-hmm. For a couple reasons. Number one, if I do them properly, you know, with the correct warm up, and then go, you know, have my sets figured out where I want to go for the day, that works phenomenal for me. But secondly, and I think this is one of the most important aspects of this discussion today, which if I know you and I will end up going into this, is the mental aspect. And let me explain it briefly. You and I both know, especially with what you were doing with the bench and the pressing and the squatting and all that years ago with Dinosaur, you have to have a phenomenal amount of concentration when you're handling these big, big loads. And we're not talking like one load here, all right? You know, I don't care what you say. If you're going to dead stop squat for the day, and I'm talking dead stop here. I know most people don't do it, but I'm going to go with what you used to do mm-hmm. back in the day and what I do presently because it's easier for me to explain this. Say you're going to 600, 650 for a dead stop, and we're talking bottom position here. Let me explain. This is no rebound. You're down at the lowest point, and you have to get under that bar, literally squeeze under it, tense your body, do your breathing. We went into this last week when Brooks and I were talking about how I set up, how we set up to get ready, and you got to mash this thing basically and stand up with it. And what I found going to the singles was this. I could put full concentration into any set I did. Now, that doesn't mean that thing's going to come up all the time because I can tell you I have no ego. I have failed miserably many times with that. But there's been many nights like I had the last few nights where I took those things and trashed them, where 527 pounds on my shoulders felt like nothing. I had to go and recheck the bar to make sure I, you know, put the correct weight on it. And that might sound like no way. Well, I'm here to tell you, yeah way. Singles, I believe, and you can do anything. I've done 5 sets of 5 with them. I've done, you know, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, whatever it is. But the singles allow me to put as much as I can into whatever I do and concentrate as hard as I can. And this is a thing that we've been touching on. The progression is the biggest thing. But the mental attitude when you get under something to know that no matter what happens, this is not going to defeat me. Even if it doesn't go up today, even if I do a short isometric with it, I move it a centimeter off those rods, I've still done something and I'm readying myself for the next workout. So Brooks, that's how I kind of think fundamentally, and you know, we've talked about this before.
I completely agree with that, and you bring up a number of interesting points. One of them ties into this whole idea of progression, mm-hmm. and it's something that I call the success habit. I believe that it is very, very important to be successful the vast majority of the time when you train. Mm-hmm. And as you said, sometimes you miss. You know, can't help that when you're training heavy. But for the most part, I believe it's very important to make those lifts. And one of the reasons why it's important is that you teach yourself to succeed. Mm-hmm. You learn to be successful, and you expect to be successful. In other words, you develop in confidence. And confidence in strength training, you know, is probably 90% of the battle.
Yes.
Yes.
So what I like about the progression method that I've outlined, this starting very light, working your way up slowly and methodically to your top weight, that does a couple of things. And it does things for you from a physical point of view and from a psychological point of view. And, of course, to some degree, those two are interrelated. But here's the point. If you were to do let's say that we're doing 400 pounds for 5 reps in the deadlift.
Okay.
Okay? Yep. Or if you use a trap bar in the trap bar deadlift. So you're working up 400 pounds, 5 reps. You're going to do one work set with that weight. That's your goal for the day. And if you get that, you go home happy. Okay? Well, obviously, it may not be obvious. Some people may think, well, I should just jump to 400 because if I don't do any warm-up sets, I won't be tired. I'll be at full strength. And so that's what I should do. Wrong. You will not be warmed up. You will not be prepared. You will not be prepared mentally. And the odds are good that you will hurt yourself. Mm-hmm. And if indeed you can make that 400 for 5 and you say, well, you know, Kubik's an idiot. No. What that proves is that by messing around, you can deadlift 400 for 5. Mm-hmm. But if you were training properly, you could deadlift more for 5 and probably do it easier. So anyhow, you go back to this progression. You start with 135. You do 5 reps. Now, obviously, that's very easy. It starts to get the blood flowing. It starts to warm up all of the joints that are involved in the movement. And I understand that you may have done a general warm-up at the start of your workout. You may have done some stretching, some loosening up, some foam rolling, some mobility stuff, maybe a little cardio, whatever. That's a general warm-up. For strength training, you need specific warm-ups. And your specific warm-up has got to be the very same exercise that you are doing that day, or the very same exercise that you're doing, and then you do the warm-up with the same warm-up progression with the next exercise that you do that day. You can't do a general warm-up and then do a specific exercise. They don't translate. You need a specific warm-up, and that's the series of progressively heavier sets that we're talking about. So you do the 135 for 5, but here's the thing that makes it really beneficial. You talked on the show about the way you approach the bar to do a heavy squat.
Correct.
And the way you position your feet. And everything you do, where you place your hands, where the bar goes on your shoulders, everything is exactly the same. It's a very precise movement pattern. That's exactly the way you do that 135 for 5. You don't wander over there, you know, with your ear glued to the cell phone, You don't sit there chatting with your bros. You don't check out the cute looking girl over there, whatever. You know, you don't stop and say, what's that on TV? You know, you are focused completely on that barbell, even though it is only 135 pounds, mm-hmm. and you could lift it in your sleep.
Yep.
The weight is not the point. This is practice. It is preparation for your work set, and you have to do it exactly the same. That 135 deserves the same focus, the same attention that you would give the 400 pounds. You go out, chalk your hands, belt up, whatever, do all the preset rituals. You know, I talk in dinosaur training, I, you know, tap my forehead right between my eyes three times. I don't know where I start. I got that or when I started it, but I always do it. That's just my little preset activator, as I describe in dinosaur training. You go to the bar, your steps are exactly the same. It's not six steps for one set and five for another. It's always exactly the same number of steps. Step to the bar, your feet are in position. They are in exactly the same position. You don't just amble up to the bar and stand there and try to figure out if you're in the right place. And of course, the bar is positioned properly before you start your set.
Yep.
Okay. You know, you don't get in and then say, well, you know, the bar's kind of little at an angle. I need to roll it back here. Let's see. Oops, now it's too far back to my right. You get all that done beforehand so that you can focus on going out and lifting. And you do that 135 for five, and you do every rep perfectly. Perfectly, precisely, with your mind into it. You are so focused, a bomb could go off, and you wouldn't know it. There's a story, a Mr. America winner from back in the day, mm-hmm. was a commercial artist, and he told an Iron Man magazine about cutting his hand with an art tool, cut his finger. It was like a razor or something, but he cut himself pretty badly, bandaged it up, went to the gym to train either that night or the next day, whatever. Thought he had the bandage all secure and that the bleeding had stopped. And at the end of his workout, he looked around and there was blood everywhere because the cut had come open. And he hadn't realized it until he finished training.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, that's mental focus. That's mental intensity. That's what we're talking about. So you do that 135, and this is both a physical warm-up and it is a mental warm-up, or perhaps you want to call it mental rehearsal or mental practice for your set with 400 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Then you load the bar to 225 and you do exactly the same thing. And again, every rep is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you've done 10 reps perfectly, two sets that are perfect. You load the bar to 275, you repeat, and again, everything is perfect. So at that point, you've done three sets that are perfect. You've done 15 reps that are perfect, and you're starting to feel pretty good about things.
Mm-hmm.
You go to 325, 350, 375, and again, every time you do it, every set that you do, it's like that. Bang, piece of cake, easy, perfect. And that gives you the confidence to go after that 400 and do it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't train that way, what happens is you go into that 400 and there's a little tiny grinning green gremlin of doubt. Hurts on your shoulder. And I'm going to tell you something. You think 400 pounds or 500 pounds or 600 pounds is heavy? Nothing in the world is heavier than that little grinning green gremlin of doubt.
Yep. Yep. Without a doubt.
Yeah. And that is what you want to avoid. You always want to avoid that little guy. And that's why you do this progression where you do everything perfectly and at the beginning very easily, because it is building your confidence. Now, here's another trick, and let me ask you about what you think about this.
Okay.
In the example that I gave where you're working up to 400 pounds for five reps for your work set, you start with 135, and I would do that for five reps.
Mm-hmm.
You go to 225, I would do that for five. You go to 275, I'd do five on 275. Your next progressively heavier warm-up sets are 325, 350, and 375. And now you'll notice we're taking those 25-pound jumps on every set. They're all the same now,
yep.
Okay? Which is the principle that you use. On the last couple of warm-up sets, 325, 350, 375, if you're trying to get to 400 for five,
mm-hmm.
would you do five reps on each of those, or three reps, or one rep?
Myself personally?
Mm-hmm.
I could do it a number of ways, depending how I planned it out. I could do a progression of like 325 for five. Were we going to go 350 next? Yes, we're going to go 25. 350 for three. I'd go 375 for one, and I'd take a crack at 400 for one. And I'll tell you this. If 400 for one went up like the way we've been talking, where we're doing this rehearsal, and basically what we're doing is we're creating really good habits here, and that's real important, I'd probably throw 415 on it and take a shot with a single there.
Okay.
And that'd be it for the day. Now, if I did this, which I would assume I would, I'd be very, very happy with that, and we wouldn't do too much more after that, mainly because, you know, we want recovery. We want to, you know, there was a guy that was here local that helped me out quite a bit with training on the early years. He was quite a lifter. And I remember one of the things he used to stress with me all the time, leave the gym with your heaviest set. And to this day, I still will try to leave the gym with the heaviest set, Brooks. So that's what I would do. That would be my progression. I'd go like 5-3. It'd be either 5-3-1 or 5-3-1-1 and take a whack at a bigger one for the day once in a while.
If I were doing singles for my work sets, that's the kind of thing that I would do as well.
Yeah.
Because you have to get to the point where, you know, doing five reps is going to tire you out. So
yeah, it's going to wear you out.
Yeah, so you drop from five to three to one. You know, if I were doing a single with 400, I'd probably do 135 for five, 225 for five, and maybe 275 for three, 325 for three, 350 for a single for sure, 375 for a single, and then 400 for a single if that was what I was working up to. But,
well, you know where you hit upon too good is this. Mm-hmm. When you're only jumping now, 25 pounds is 25 pounds, all right? We know that. But your ability to succeed, and that's what we're talking about here, is not only physical but mental success, is 25 pounds if you've been rehearsing and doing this for a long time, and you know, and 135 is as important as 400 because you go in at 135 and in your head it is 400. So you've practiced, you've got under it, you know, like you do, you tap your forehead. I take my forehead and tap the buffalo bar. I hit it three times in the forehead,
yeah.
Not to split my skull open, obviously, but that's one of the things I do besides the feet positioning and the twisting of the hands and all that. But that's another story. 25 pounds is not going to be so taxing on you as like if, you know, these guys want to throw on a set of 45s. Now, that's getting a little bit ahead of the game. 25s, we're not going to say you're going to hit every note every time, but 25s aren't bearing down on you and beating you so hard set after set where, you know, you might get to, say, 375 and you're like, I'm out of gas here, man. And it's not so much even the rep scheme. It's just the weight is too heavy and I'm not ready for it. So I think the way you've got the progression set up there is definitely going to, you know, you're going to find your success at 400.
Yeah. Now here's a different twist. Let's say your 400 work set is going to be five reps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're working up to 400 pounds for five reps. I take the same poundage jumps, 135, 225, 275, 325, 350, 375.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not do five reps on every set.
Right.
Even though I was working up to 400 for five reps. And the reason is the 325 for five might be about as heavy as I would go for five reps, and I might only do three on that.
Yep.
The 350 for five, that's going to start tiring me out a little bit too much for the 400 for five.
Mm-hmm.
And 375 for five, that's going to be cutting into my 400 for five.
Correct.
And remember, I want these sets to be perfect form, perfect reps, and I want them to be confidence builders. The last thing I want is to try to do 375 for five and have a heavy set that I struggle to make and then say, man, I don't know how in the world I'm ever going to do 400 for five.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would probably do if we're working up to 400 for five is start at 135 for five, 225 for five, 275 for five, 325 for either five or three, 350 for three, 375 for either three or maybe even one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the real thing I want to do is I want to get the feel of that weight.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that when I lift 400 off the ground, it doesn't feel monstrously heavier than my warm-up sets. But I don't want to tire myself out, so I would possibly do one rep, maybe do three reps. I definitely would not do five. I want that to be a confidence builder and a confidence booster. Then I'm ready for that 400 for five.
Well, here's two things that I see. And I don't ever hear anybody talking about this, and this is something I want your opinion on for sure. But before I hit that, I'll say this. You know, when you're doing workouts like of this magnitude, and you know how we're talking about, all right, how are we going to shift gears? We're going to go to 400 today for our pull. And we're saying, well, we don't really want to go fives all the way because possibly if we're going to hit five on 400, we've got to change gears. Now, this is something that you and I have addressed, and you said this in the beginning somewhat in the show, is this. This comes from experience, too, because, you know, somebody that hasn't a lot of experience under their belt is going to stick with, say, like Reg Park, five sets of five. This is the way he does it. Well, I got to stick with it, which right there, you could end up running into, you're going to hit a brick wall. I don't care. I mean, yeah, Reg Park was phenomenal, but this guy or gal isn't Reg Park. So once again, you're going to have to learn from experience. Just like you said, we got to learn to walk in at 135. We got to set the body. We've got to lift 135, whether it's for 400, 500, 600. That's it. Now I got to try to remember my second thought. Well, let's keep going because I can't think of what it'll come to me.
Okay.
It was good too. I want. Oh boy.
It'll come. It'll come back.
It'll come.
You made an interesting point. You said that we're some of the things that we're covering are things that you never hear people talk about, and that's true, and it's really interesting to me. the vast majority of training information out there is give me a workout, give me the exercises to do, the sets, and the reps, as though that was a magic formula. And it's not.
Nope.
That's just the very beginning. The real nuts and bolts of training, the real valuable information, is the kind of thing that we're talking about right now in this show. And this is one reason why I enjoy doing these podcasts with you.
Thank you.
And you know, hope that people are finding this benefit that we're trying to give to them. The strength training is both a science and an art. And part of the art is learning how to train. Everything that we're talking about is how to train. I mean, it'd be very easy to just sit there and, you know, knock out a blog post. Here's your workout. You know, and then the show would be, okay, Brooks, what's a good workout for the day? Well, Eric, I'm glad you asked that question. I did a really good one on my blog today. It's the super duper weight gaining program, and it's guaranteed that anybody can gain massive amounts of body weight in a minimal amount of time. Yada yada yada, blah blah blah. By following this special program of sets and reps, you know, and whatever. Okay, but that's the lazy way of trying to put information out there. And obviously it's important to give people workouts, and it's important to stress the right exercises, the most productive exercises. But the real key to all of this is learning how to train. And I keep saying over and over again, and I'll continue to say, strength training should be an athletic activity.
Yes.
Your movements should be precise. I was the other day, I was reading something that Bob Hoffman wrote back in 1936, where he made the point that many top weightlifters began their career as gymnasts and hand balancers. And obviously, gymnastics and hand balancing are going to build a lot of upper body pushing or pressing power. So you can see, particularly back in the day when the military press was one of the three lifts in official competition, and it's not anymore, so things are a bit different. But, you know, back then, the military press was one of the three lifts that was a make or break you in competition. And you had to be really good at it to have a hope of ever being a weightlifting champion. And if you were a gymnast or a hand balancer, that really helped in that military press department. So Hoffman was making that point. But another interesting point that he didn't really address was that gymnastics and hand balancing teach you to control your body, to control your muscles. And that's what I'm trying to convey when I'm talking about precise movement. Strength training is about precise, focused, every rep exactly the same, perfect, identical, no matter whether it's the first rep in a set or the last set, no matter whether it's your warm-up set or your working set. They all look the same. Everything is the same. It's precision. It's an athletic movement. And, you know, I'll go back to the example of someone who's throwing the discus, throwing the shot put, hammer throw, high jump, long jump, pole vault, whatever. People practice those movements as an athletic movement to develop the skill and the technique to do them perfectly. They repeat that over and over and over in their training, and their goal is to do exactly the right movement every time. Strength training should be exactly the same. And what happens is, over time, when you do this long enough, you start, you know, all of it is rehearsal, it's practice, it's repetition, and eventually you get to the point where you do these movements perfectly every single time.
Yep.
And that is really where the magic starts.
Yeah, because and I just thought of what that was when you said something. It's
when I said the magic and bang.
The magic, it came right to my brain now. You don't hear a lot about this, and I know that you and I can hit upon this pretty good because of our experiences. Someone right now is probably thinking, how much time do we take between sets? And you and I both know as you get heavier, and I know that everybody's going to say, well, you should be in more, you know, more an enduring athlete. Well, there's a lot of enduring athletes, but when you're in a deadlift or a squat and you're, you know, we're talking a mark of anywhere, let's say from 400 to a 700 pound either or, why don't we address as far as time goes, Brooks? Sometimes you need a little bit of a little gas between sets. Not only if you want to, you know, sip a little water, you don't want to be swallowing a lot of air, obviously. And you know, let's face it, after a heavy set, you know, your head can be a little rattled too. You know, you kind of want your brain matter to settle a little bit. So, what would you think about that? I mean, you know, you've been in all kind of competition, obviously, and all that. What's your take on that?
Well, first let me briefly address, you know, anyone who says train fast because you want to be an enduring athlete.
Yeah.
Okay. Apples and oranges.
Yep.
Endurance athlete, apples. Strength athlete, oranges. Mm-hmm. They're two different things. You train for strength or you train for endurance. If you need both, and sometimes you do, for example, in the military, in many athletic endeavors, you need both. You do one kind of training for strength, and you do one kind of training for endurance.
Right.
Okay? So, first of all, that addresses that.
Okay.
Second, there's a safety factor here. If you try to go too fast with heavy weights, you lose your form. You don't focus, you're breathing, you're not concentrating, you're rattled, bad things can happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, so just from a safety point of view, and again, remember what I'm talking about, perfect, precise reps.
Yep.
You need to make sure that you are ready for the next set. Now, having said that, you start out, when you start out with your light weights, you can train pretty quickly. I mean, you do 135 for five. You know, again, if you're working up to 400, you do 135 for five. If your next set, that's easy. Load the bar for the next set, chalk your hands, and go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't need to sit there. You don't need to stand around the water fountain. You don't need to waste time, and you certainly don't need to start talking.
Right.
You know, you've read my stuff. You know about the no talking rule.
Oh yeah.
You know, the no talking rule means no talking.
Yep.
You train fast because it helps you focus. You stay. You know, you don't want to cool down physically by taking too long between sets, and you don't want to lose the mental focus by waiting too long. So you do 135. You load the bar and, without very much rest, because you don't need it, you go.
Right.
You do your set with 225, you load the bar to 275, rest a little bit more, but not very much. You just need a couple of minutes, and then go.
Yep.
Load the bar to 325. Now you're probably going to be going a little bit slower, but not very much. You probably, between 275 and 325, you might need 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes tops. 325 to 350, same thing. 350 to 375, little bit more. So If you've been resting 3 or 4 minutes, now maybe you rest 5 minutes.
Right.
And before that set with 400, 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you don't rest so long that you lose focus. You don't let someone talk to you and lose your focus. You stay in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find a way to do that. You know, the way that I do it is to train alone in my garage.
Totally agree.
You know, but you can't always do that. And sometimes you have to learn a way to find your focus in the gym. Great story, by the way, just as an aside here.
Sure.
Tommy Kono was training in a gym in Sacramento when he was a young man. And this is where he is training to get to the point where he is the best in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is serious stuff. He's a young man on a mission. And he's training in the basement of the Sacramento YMCA. And they've got the weights. And they've also got a boxing ring down there and a heavy bag right by the weightlifting platform and a speed bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tommy's down there. And while he's doing snatches and cleaning jerks and squatting and pressing, people are sitting there smacking the bags around.
Yep.
And he had to learn to block that out.
Mm-hmm.
He had to learn to focus on what he was doing, even though 6 feet away, some idiot was smacking that you know, doing the rat tat 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 tat
sure.
thing on the light bag.
Yep.
And you know, my apologies to any of the boxing fans out there. I'm not saying boxing fans are idiots. I'm saying there was someone down there who didn't understand that Tommy needed a little bit of quiet during the time he was doing the lift. That's all I'm saying. So anyhow, if you train in a commercial gym, one of the challenges is to learn to block out all of the noise and all of the distraction. It's not easy, but you can learn to do it. And actually, it can be a good thing, because if you can block that out in a gym setting, boy, I'll tell you what, if you're in a contest, you can block out everything and just focus on your lifting.
Yeah.
So you can develop some really strong powers of concentration that way. It's an example of overcoming adversity.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've probably answered the question of how much time. I would say no more than 5 minutes.
No, I agree.
Now, there's also the question, what do you do if you do multiple work sets, like mm-hmm. 3 sets of 5 with your working weight? In that case, I would say you're probably going to be resting 5 minutes between each set.
Yep.
And that may sound like a lot, but if you ever time yourself, you know, time yourself from the point where you rack the bar or you put the bar back down on the platform
mm-hmm.
until you pick it up again.
Yep.
5 minutes is not that much time.
No.
It really is not, particularly if you're doing sets of, you know, heavy singles or doubles, triples, sets of five with a heavy weight. You really got to do some mental focus to get back into the game, to put your war paint back on
yep.
in the next set. And for a lot of people, 5 minutes is, at when they first do it, you know, it's like almost impossible. A lot of people with really heavy sets, the first couple times they do it, or, you know, maybe the first number of times that they do it, they're going to feel more like 7 minutes, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
John Davis used to rest up to 15 minutes between really heavy sets sometimes.
Yep.
But that's going to make a really, really long workout.
Yep.
And I go back to, you do not want to cool down, which, by the way, is a reason to always dress appropriately in the gym. You know, this You know, running around half naked for either a man or a woman. You know, I don't care what you see on YouTube. I don't care what you see on Facebook. You know, I know everybody wants those selfies, but dress appropriately for the gym. And that means keeping your muscles warm.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to stay mentally focused, and that's just so critical. And if a 15-minute rest takes you out of things mentally, then it's much better to go with a shorter period of time, even if it's harder physically.
Yeah, because you know what happens? Your muscles all loosen up too. There's a tautness I like to keep in mind. And what I usually do, Brooks, is I have an egg timer.
Yeah.
And I time myself a lot like that. And here's how I do it. Like, I've just got a one-car garage, which is chocked full of everything, and then all the stuff outside on both the other side of the garage and all the stones in the driveway. I take myself – now, my power rack is in the very back, in the middle of the garage wall. Not quite to it, obviously, because you wouldn't be able to get what you got to get, you know, load plates on and all that with if it was that close. I stand at the very end of the garage, right where the door is open, and I pretty much just lock my body standing there. I won't sit down unless I'm tired. I don't, it's almost like when you used to see the old style boxers. I'm talking where they would, you don't sit down between rounds, because I feel, once again, it's almost like, you know, you see a lot of these guys that like to squat and sit and stand back up. I never was a big fan of that, because I always thought that loosened the lower back and everything, and that could be cause for a problem. That's just my personal opinion. So what I do, the egg timer started, say, for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you'll hear the tick, 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 tick. But you know what? It teaches you once again to farm that noise out of your head. I will sit there and look at that loaded bar, and I'll literally do everything I can to put myself almost in trance-like position.
Mm-hmm.
When that thing goes off, I'm already chalked like you were talking about, whatever else I'm doing, and I immediately beeline right for that power rack. At that point, I'm doing all the sets in my head necessary to twisting the bar, setting foot position, tapping the head on the middle of the buffalo bar, taking three breaths. The third breath, I sink it. I'm under that bar, and away we go. So that's how I usually do it.
I do something very, very similar.
Yep.
and always have. And, you know, I'm at the point now where in the workouts that I do, you know, out in the garage, which of course makes it easy because there's no one else. I don't have training partners. I'm not sharing with anyone. It's just me, and I'm able to completely control the time and the pace of the workout.
Yep.
But everything is virtually exactly the same in terms of the time between sets, the time that it takes me from where I'm standing resting to where I'm on the platform to bar overhead, back off the platform.
Exactly.
You know, it's literally exactly the same to the second. And I know that because I videotape all of my lifts in training so that I can check them between sets. And so the videotape has a timer. And you know, I know, flip it on, walk to platform, get set, perform lift, lower bar, walk back to video camera, turn it off. You know, it takes exactly the same number of seconds every time.
Yep.
You know, and so it's very precise. And then what I do, I've got my training journal with my workout for the day outline.
Yep.
I check off the lift that I just made. I put the video camera on play or playback, and I watch my set.
Yep.
And after I watch it, I go over and chalk, I come back, I flip the camera to record, walk the platform, and there I am. It's exactly the same.
Yep.
Then, as I'm nearing the end of the workout and the weights are getting heavier, what I do to give myself a little bit more time and to really help analyze those heavier lifts, you know, because it's easier to do a lighter weight with perfect form.
Right. Correct.
It's harder to maintain perfect form with a heavier weight. So you want to really work on the form and technique with the heavy weight, and that's always my goal, which, by the way, is the reverse of what most people think.
Yeah.
You know, most people think that when you have a heavy weight, it's out of control and it's every which way and so on. It's like, no. Heavy weight is where precise form is most important because that's what allows you to lift the heavy weight. But what heavier weights is I watch the video again, only this time I watch it in slow motion and I'm set and just about to initiate the lift.
Yep.
To the end of the lift. And that gives me another 30 seconds, which doesn't sound like much, but when you're doing the heavier sets in the workout, you know, you're looking for everything that you can get.
Yep.
I'm not going to cool off, and I'm certainly going to stay in it mentally because I'm watching, I'm analyzing what I'm doing by watching the video.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just watching it and saying, you know, wow, that's really great. You know, look at me. I'm looking at my form, my technique, the angles, the body positions. Where's my weight? Bar got too far away from me. How'd that happen? Where did I make the mistake? What do I change on the next one? You know, so I'm really deeply engaged and completely focused.
Yep.
That's what I like to do. And interestingly, I have tried sitting down between sets.
Yep.
And I have tried standing up between sets. And I'll tell you what, I much prefer standing.
Me too.
And an interesting thing that I'm doing that I'll throw out to people, and I guess we're kind of winding down on the show,
yep.
So we'll have to follow up on this idea later, but remember, I'm training for Olympic weightlifting, and Olympic weightlifting requires the fastest possible movement.
Mm-hmm.
So speed is very important. And I've been experimenting with increasing slightly the speed with which I walk to the platform.
Okay.
Okay.
And reducing the amount of time to set up, get in position, get set to perform the lift.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to do is almost pretend that I'm in a competition situation and the buzzer is almost about to go off and disqualify me.
Yep.
And I've got to get the bar up above knee height before the buzzer rings.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, the lift's no good, even if I make it.
Right.
Okay. If you watch Olympic weightlifting competition, occasionally you see that sort of thing happen. So I've been working with a little bit faster get out to the platform and a little bit faster get set, get in position, and go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because we've got, you know, I'm recording this on video and the video has a timer, I know exactly how long it takes. And you know, I have a goal not merely to lift the weight, but to lift the weight within a certain number of seconds.
Right.
Okay. And what I'm finding is that it seems that if I speed everything up a little bit, I actually move faster when I perform the lift.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is actually not happening at all, and I just think it is.
Right.
I don't know if it's happening, and if it is happening, and I think it is, because as I say, I videotaped this, and it looks like the movement is faster. It feels faster. Mm-hmm. I think what's happening, if indeed that's the case, I think what's happening is that by thinking speed and fast, everything I'm doing is a little faster and a little quicker. And it, you know, it's similar to grabbing the bar for a heavy lift, let's say a heavy deadlift, because most, you know, most people are probably more familiar with the deadlift than an Olympic lift.
Yep.
You grab the bar and you wrap your hands around it and you squeeze it so hard that you're going to put fingerprints on the metal.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. I shake it too.
Yeah. And one thing that that does is it gets you in the mode of exerting ferocious strength.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking strength. And then you perform your lift with maximum strength. And I think if you think strength, strength follows. If you think speed, speed follows.
Yep. And, you know, Brooks, what I call that kind of, I don't know if you go with this, but I call it creating like new pathways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense to like what I'm saying? You know,
yep.
you're creating via thought. It's almost like you're putting something new on a canvas here. It's like, you know, we talked about that before. You know, what you think about most, you become.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely true. And you magnetize things that you dwell on. And anybody that doesn't think that's true doesn't have a clue then. So when you're creating these new pathways, and for your, like with what you're doing with the Olympic lifting, and you're saying, okay, I'm going to walk up to that platform faster. I'm not going to sit there and kind of hem and haw with the bar a little bit. We're going to jump right into it because we don't want to get red lights here. We want all white lights. And the next thing you know, that's what you're saying. It's almost like you're kind of in disbelief because suddenly now, not only are you seeing this on film, but it's actually transpiring and taking a life of its own. So that's how I would, what you just said, that's how I would verbalize it.
I like what you said about creating new pathways, and I like your reference to magnetizing. I mean, this is basically another aspect of the law of attraction.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
And that's something, you know, all of these are very important concepts that we should cover in the future for people. Because,
yep.
Again, this is the stuff that is really the nuts and bolts of productive training. It goes so far beyond sets and reps.
Yeah. And, you know, this is like masterful masterpiece. You know, they like to say that like masterpiece theater. Well, this is masterpiece weightlifting. It's like this stuff we're talking about is discussions that if you've never thought of this, this is something you should really start thinking about in your training, and you should begin to start executing these principles, because I can't guarantee anybody anything because I'm not there with you lifting, but I believe the principles you and I have hit upon for these weeks and weeks we've been doing this show, well, I know they work because, look, I mean, I'll say it again. I sound like a broken record, but since 92 – when Dinosaur Training came out, and that's pretty much what I followed with a lot of different things. I took concepts out of what you wrote, and I applied them to the way I wanted to train. In fact, I'll tell you right now, the show is probably not going to be on for another week, but Steve Helmicki and I did a show on people that in weightlifting that made major, how would I put it, well, they were very important in the lives of us and how we've kind of formulated ourselves today. And I'm not trying to embarrass you or anything, but you were one of the principal people that I mentioned who's motivated me to the point where I've had quite a bit of success. And now here you and I are doing a podcast together.
Just goes to show you it's a small world.
It sure is. And we just said what you think about most, you become.
Yep.
Well, here we are. You and I are prime examples of we're sitting here, you know, engaging in I think, some very, very not only constructive conversation, but this is the stuff that people are searching for. And you made the comment before, you know, oh, please design a program for me. Is this the reps I need? Is this the days I should do it? You know what I'm going to say? Bullshit to that. Bull. You can go out and look at all the stuff you've done, Brooks. Could be fabulous stuff, but you know what? If you don't know how to apply the methodology of what you're teaching here, yeah, they could probably do your five sets of five, whatever you want, and they could make gains. But there's going to come a point where you're going to smash right into a wall, and you're going to be like, what do I do now? All right, do I switch to another training scheme of Brooks? Yep, and you might be good for another 6 months. But eventually, if you're really in this game, if you're in this physical culture, if you're a physical culturist, as I say now, you're going to go out and apply these principles that they've learned from your books or whomever it is they enjoy looking at, and eventually they could be sitting here talking to you and I someday. That's how I see it.
Yeah, well, that's very true. And for anyone who's listening and is asking, where can I learn more about this?
Yep.
Dinosaur Training, Lost Secrets of Strength and Development, my first book, has a number of chapters on the mental aspects of training. And I talk about everything that we've covered in the show. I talk about preset activators, visualization drills between your sets, before your workout, during your workout, concentration drills, how to really learn to focus on what you're doing. And if you already have a copy, go back and read those chapters again, reread them.
Yep.
If you don't have a copy, Dinosaur Training is $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And I'll tell you what, that's not a whole lot of money to get some really extremely useful information that, frankly, you're not going to get anywhere else.
Nope,
so if you really want to succeed in this, train your brain, start with Dinosaur Training, and yeah, there's a lot of different exercises and techniques and workouts, a lot of stuff that's going to motivate you and get you pumped up and want to train. But I believe, and I think many others believe, that the most important part of the book are those chapters that deal with what we've been talking about today, the mental side of progressive strength training.
Yes,
and, you know, that is the secret. It's learning to train with full focus, not just with your body, but with your mind. And once you learn that, you will succeed.
Without a doubt. And don't be afraid to go after something with, you know, just with all out, balls to the wall. You know, we're not losing tonight. We're going at it, and we're going out there where the concept is it's not going to kick us around. We're going to punch it right in the teeth, and we're going to get it done. This is what you need, you know, and you don't have to be wild about it and all that. It's just like the boxer, you know. If you know what you're doing, you can still have that type of power, aggression, however you want to phrase it. But when you can put the power to either the hands or, like we're talking with weightlifting, you know, overhead, squat, off the ground, when you can harness that type of power and you go into these mental concepts that we talked about today, there, you know, other than an act of God, there's not going to – I don't see anything stopping you. You know, obviously we have glitches, things happen, but I'm talking about you could go in 9 out of 10 workouts and succeed, and even if the 10th you fail, you're coming back on the 11th and you're going to nail it right to the floor. So, Brooks, are we pretty good? I mean, you got any more you want to add?
I think we've covered the topic in good detail and given people a lot of good information and a lot to think about until next time.
Okay. Do you want to give, I mean, obviously do you want to say anything about Knife, Fork, and Muscle and give your website, or what do you want to do?
Well, what I'm going to say about Knife, Fork, Muscle is, you may have noticed that we are pretty serious about hard, heavy training, at Dinosaur Training and at Fiorella Barbell. And if you're serious about hard, heavy training, you need to back it up with the right kind of nutrition. And that's in my new book, Knife, Fork, Muscle. You can get that book. You can get dinosaur training at my website, www.brookskubik.com. That's BROOKSKUBIK.com. A lot of good information out there. If you have any questions about what might be most useful for you at your current level of development, shoot me an email, info@brookskubik.com. But otherwise, just come back next week and listen to what we share next week, because we've got some good stuff that we're going to be dropping on you in 7 days.
Cool. All right. I'll say this. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company. That's www.fiorellobarbellco.com. That's co.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. We are on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell. We are on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@nicap.rr.com. Motivation and Muscle website is up and it's rolling. It looks beautiful. And Monday morning, we should have the brand new Fiorello Barbell Company website. It looks phenomenal. So slowly but surely, we're connecting everything up, and sky's the limit here. We're going to, you know, besides having people like Brooks on, we are going to be doing an awful lot of things between now and the end of the year. And obviously, 2015 is going to be very, very big for this company. We've worked very hard to achieve what we have so far. I am very pleased of where we are right now, but obviously I'm not a guy that will ever be satisfied. That's just my DNA. But I got to tell you, I got to thank everybody that's come to this podcast. It's phenomenal what's happened in the last 17 weeks here. And everybody that's been on the show, I can't give you my gratitude enough. And we're going to have quite a few new people on here again shortly. I'm having people reach out to me because people like Herman in Germany are finding Brooks. They were fans of Brooks for years. They went out and Googled Brooks one day and they found Motivation and Muscle. I'm very pleased. I'm very happy with everything that's transpiring here. So once again, I want to thank everybody. Brooks, once again, thank you for prime time, you know, top of the shelf show as usual.
Thanks, Eric. It was my pleasure.
You're welcome. So for Brooks Kubik, this is Eric Fiorello. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. We'll have this up shortly, and Brooks and I will see you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.